Perek Membeis, Pasik Yud Beis, sorry, Perek Yud Beis, Pasik Membeis. We learned at the end of 430 years the Jewish people went out of Mitzrayim. And we learned the 430 years started from the time Avraham Avinu was told by Hashem, which was 30 years before the birth of Yitzchak, that the Jews are going to go out of Egypt in 400 years. But the 400 years began from the birth of Yitzchak. The Jews were actually in Egypt 210 years. But from the time Hashem promised Avraham Avinu that the Jews are going to be in Egypt, it was 430 years. And then it says, in the middle of the day, Hashem took the Jews out of Mitzrayim. Okay? So now in Pasuk Lamed Membeis it says, Leil Shimurim Hu LaHashem, this is a night of being watched for Hashem, L'Hitziyo Me'eretz Mitzrayim, to take the Jews out of Egypt. Hu alayla azel Hashem, this is the night for Hashem. Shimurim l'chol b'nei Yisrael, it should be watched for all Jews, aladereitzam, for all generations. So Hashem is promising that the night of Pesach is a guarded night. It's called Lel Shimurim. And therefore, as people know, you don't say the entire Shema. Some people leave the doors open. It's a night that God protects the Jewish people. Why? Because this is the night that Hashem took the Jews out of Mitzrayim. That is the simple meaning of the Pasuk. A deeper meaning, the Mefarshim explain, that what is Lel Shimurim? Shimurim does not only mean Hashem is watching, but like it says by Yosef's dreams, the Aviv Shamar Esadavar, his father was anticipating and waiting for it to happen. Lel Shimurim Lashem does not only mean Hashem guarded the night, that it's a watchful night, but it's actually the night that Hashem was waiting for, so to speak, from the beginning of creation, that this night should be the night that the Jewish people leave Egypt, because this is when the Jewish people became a nation. When the Jews left Egypt, the Medrash says this is when the people became a nation. Now, if you look in the Pasuk says two things, okay. Lel Shimurim Hu LaHashem is guarded for Hashem, and then it says Shimurim L'chol B'nei Yisrael. It's guided for the Jews. So the Klei Yakar explains that the Pasuk here is speaking about two guardings. It's a guarding that Hashem guards, and it's a guarding that the Jews guard. So the Klei Yakar explains, what does it mean? So he explains as follows. Hashem says to the Jews, you watch my candle, I'll watch your candle. Hashem makes a deal. You watch my thing, I'll watch your thing. As he uses the expression, Hashem says to the Jews, Neri biyotcha. My candle, God says to the Jews, my candle is in your hands. V'nercha biyodi. And your candle is in my hands. God said, you watch me and I'll watch yours. What does it mean? Ner mitzvah. A mitzvah is a candle. The pasuk says, "Ner mitzvah." A mitzvah is a candle. That's Hashem, which is in the hand of the Jews. The Jew is Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam. The candle of God is the neshama of the Jew. So there's a neshama which is a ner, and there are mitzvahs that are ner. God said, "You keep my mitzvahs. You watch my mitzvahs. I'll watch your neshama." So it's a deal. God says, I'll watch for you and you watch for me. So that's why the Klei Yakar explains, this is what the Pasuk is saying. It's a night of watching LaHashem, that Hashem watches, and at the same time, it's a night of watching for the Jews. Because God says, I'm watching your thing, you watch my thing. That's one thing. Then there's another, Arachayim, and it's similar to Targum Yenisim Ben Azil, and so on. But he says, the Arachayim explains, five great miracles happened this night, the night of Pesach. In fact, it's interesting, Targum Yenisim explains it a little bit differently. But we'll first see what the Aruch Chaim says. Number one, it says in the Pasuk, if everybody remembers the story with Avraham Avinu, with the four kings and the five kings, and then the four kings won the war and they captured Lot, and Avraham Avinu went himself with Eliezer to go fight against the four kings. So it says, the night went by. And the Gemara says, It's a v'yachalaklem halayla, the night, the famous night. What night are we talking about? The night of Pesach. So a miracle happened to Avraham Avinu the night of Pesach. Yitzias Mitzrayim says v'hi b'chatzi halayla. Also the night of Pesach. Then there was a third time in the days of Chizkiah HaMelech. There was, huh? They went out in the lunch break. They told Paro going out for the lunch break and they never came back. The restaurant was too good. No, so it says, so you don't need what we have here. If you look in the Pasuk, it says, Hu'alayla zel Hashem leitziyam eretz Mitzrayim. And then the next Pasuk before it says, Ba'etzem ayem azeh. So, good question, huh? Yeah, so the simple answer is, as the Medrash explains, Rashi explains, everybody explains, Paro told them get out at night. So the freedom to go out, they were given at night. When did they actually leave? In the day. It took the Jews time to get, they didn't know which suitcase to take. They had a big problem, what to pack. The Jews had a lot of problems, and the women wanted one thing, the husband wanted something else. It took a long time to pack.
And you were there.
Huh? Of course I was there. You weren't? I was loading the donkeys with the money. Anyway, so another thing he said was in the days of Chizkiah Melech. In the days of Chizkiah Melech. In Chizkiah Melech, the Goyish king was Sancherev Melech Ashur. The most powerful king at that time was Sancherev, the king of Assyria. Not Syria, Assyria. And Gavriel came, there's a whole story, and killed out the whole camp of Sancherev. And then, we learned already, Hashem was upset with Chizkiah because after the Mapol of Sancherev, which happened the night of Pesach, Chizkiah didn't sing praise to God, and because of that Hashem was upset, and he said, okay, I wanted to make you Mashiach, now I'm not making you Mashiach, a whole thing. But the bottom line of it is, when did the Mapol of Sancherev happen? He says, that night. Going another place in history, in the days of Mordechai and Esther, when King Ahasuerus couldn't sleep and he told him to bring the Book of Chronicles, the night of Pesach. And the fifth thing the Rachaim says was Mashiach's coming is going to be the night of Pesach. So he says, when the Torah speaks about that night, the Torah is speaking about a famous night that took place in history. So this is what the Rachaim explains. The Yonasan ben Aziel and Targum Yerushalmi, they learn it a little bit different. And they say, four things happened before Hashem in this night of Pesach. One is that Hashem revealed Himself to create the world. Second, Hashem revealed Himself to Avraham Avinu. The third time was when He revealed Himself in Mitzrayim. The fourth time was when Hashem wanted to redeem the Jewish people from the nations of the world. So again, these are the four lails, the four nights, but these are the uniqueness of the night of Pesach, that a lot of big things, a lot of great miracles, happen the night of Pesach. And that's why it says, Leil Shimurim, plural, twice plural, which is four, these are the nights that God watched and did great miracles to the Jewish people. So this is the way they explain this pasuk. Okay, next pasuk Mem Gimel. Well, basically the halacha is the Mashiach is coming in Nissan. But that doesn't mean he can't come today. Because we daven the Mashiach should come every day. But Nissan Nigalu, well, there's a lot of explanations of Chassidus. Number one, the simple meaning is, in Nissan he's more prone to come. It's more auspicious time to come. It's easier to get him to come in Nissan. But Chassidus explains, it doesn't only mean Nissan as in the physical month of Nissan. It means Nissan as a concept of miracles. Tishrei refers to the Avod of the Jew. Nissan refers to revelation from above. So it doesn't only mean in the month of Nisan he's coming. It means Mashiach's coming is the concept of Nisan. Concept of miracles. Okay. The next pasuk is a very misinterpreted pasuk by many people. Now obviously this pasuk is out of place. Because as Rashi explains, Hashem said this pasuk on the 14th of Nisan. Because he had to tell him the laws of the Korban Pesach. This is already, the Jews are out, about to go out. So this is already too late, so to speak. So Rashi says, as the rule goes in Torah, Ein mukdam ha-mucha b'Torah, there's no chronological order in Chumash. So basically, this pasuk happened before Pesach happened, on the 14th of Nisan. V'yem Hashem ha-meshe v'adin, Hashem said to Meshe and Adin. And by the way, in Chumash, when it says Hashem said to Meshe and Adin, it doesn't mean Hashem said it to Aaron. Hashem said to Moshe to tell Aaron. Zeis chukas ha-pasach, this is the statute of the Korban Pesach. Kol ben nechor le-yechol bei. Kol ben nechor le-yechol bei means that any person who is basically a stranger is not allowed to eat it. Okay, alienated person. We're going to see what it means that a person who is not part of the Jewish people is not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. Yeah, that's what I said. This is one of the misinterpreted psukim. It doesn't say that a guy can't come to your seder. It says a guy can't eat the Korban Pesach. No, this is the mistake. I'm saying this is the mistake. The reason why a guy can't come to the seder has nothing to do with the seder. The problem is he can't come to you for a Yom Tov meal any time of the year. If a seder is Friday night, the guy could come to your seder. But if a guy and Yom Tov, you're only allowed to cook for Jews. It says Hu levada yosel lachem. You're allowed to cook for Jews. You're not allowed to cook for animals. You're not allowed to cook for goyim. You're only allowed to cook for a Jew on Yom Tov. So therefore, there's a din in Shulchan Aruch about every Yom Tov, not only about Pesach. Any Yom Tov, you're not allowed to invite a goy. If you didn't invite him and he pops in, you don't have to throw him out. You know, you can feed him. But you're not allowed to invite a goy because you were afraid you might add food and Yom Tov and cook also for the goy. So even if your food is all prepared, and it doesn't matter, you're not allowed to invite a goy on Yom Tov. So 1 second. So on Friday night, Shabbos, you could have a goy because you can't cook anyway. You're not afraid you're going to cook for the goy because nobody's allowed to cook. But the misinterpretation of this is, of Kol Ben Nechor, any foreigner can't eat it, it means a guy can't eat the Korban Pesach. In fact, there's a very interesting, the Ramla is being down, but there's a very interesting story in the Gemara. What does it say here? There's a very famous story in the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda ben Pseda. There was once this guy that bragged to Rabbi Yehuda ben Pseda. He said, you know, he lived in the Tzivan, which is far away from Yerushalayim. And he said, he bragged once to Rabbi Yehuda ben Pseda, the famous Rabbi Yehuda ben Pseda. He said, I trick you, Kohanim. I bring a Korban Pesach, and they give me to eat from the Korban Pesach. Even though the Torah says no, but I tricked them. And I eat the Korban Pesach every year. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Pseda said to him, he wanted the Kohanim to realize that the guy's a goy. So he said to the guy, he says, you don't trick them. You don't know what you're talking about. Do they ever give you the tail to eat? The tail of the animal is supposed to be juicy, whatever. He said, do they ever give you the tail of the animal to eat? He said, no, they never offered it to me. He said, you see, go ask them for the tail. So the next year, the guy went for the Pesach, and he brought the Korban Pesach, and he said, I want to eat the tail. And they declared him, no, they're not allowed to eat the tail. So the Kohanim realized something was funny. So they said, who told you to ask for the tail? So he said, what do you mean? Rabbi Yehuda ben Pseda told me to ask for the tail. So the Kohanim realized that something was funny, and they checked into him, and they found out he was a guy, and they threw him out. So they sent a message to Rabbi Yehuda ben Pseda that you live in the Tzivan, and your net spreads all the way to Yerushalayim.
How
They killed him, yeah. I don't want to say that. They killed him.
Aaron used to talk to Hashem himself, right?
There are a few times that he did speak.
And why does Moshe, Hashem has to tell Moshe to tell Aaron? Why can't Hashem tell Aaron direct himself since he talks to the enemy?
Yeah. Okay, he did this, went up to Yerushalayim. They killed him, yeah. Aaron was not great enough for Hashem to speak to him, but Hashem in Chumash wants to show that Aaron was very, very great, so he said Moshe and Aaron together. But Rashi explains that really Hashem only spoke to, a few times Hashem spoke to Aaron. But as a rule, Hashem spoke to Moshe to speak to Aaron. Okay, so he says as follows. So Rashi explains, what does Kol Ben Nechad mean? Rashi says, if Kol Ben Nechad, by the way, literally means a foreigner. Rashi explains it doesn't only mean a guy. A Jew that acts foreign to God, meaning he worships idols, is also not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. That's what Rashi says. Echad nochir v'echad Yisrael b'mashma. It doesn't matter if it's a Jew or a guy. If the guy was a stranger, meaning he worshipped idols, he's not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. And this was the logic, by the way, that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he came down on Shavuos B'Tammuz with the Luchis, and he saw that the Jewish people were worshipping the golden calf, Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchis. What was his logic of breaking the Luchis? Moshe Rabbeinu said to himself, this pasuk, that if there's one mitzvah, Korban Pesach, the Torah says if you worship idols, you can't have anything to do with it. So if you're worshiping idols, how do you expect to get the entire Torah? If you can't even have one mitzvah, how in the world can you get the whole Torah? So Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos because of this pasuk, really. He said if an Aveda Zora can't even eat a Korban Pesach, how much more so that he's not able to get any part of the Torah at all? Okay, not only that, v'chol eved ish miknas kosef, any slave that you buy for money, and I'll explain what this means, umalta esei, if you circumcise him, az yechol bei, then the Rebbe can eat. Then the master can eat. Which means, this pasuk, the way the Gemara learns it, means that if you buy a non-Jewish slave, and you didn't give him a bris, the owner, the Jew, cannot eat the Korban Pesach. He cannot eat the Korban Pesach because his slave is not circumcised. Because that's it's a very simple thing. The Torah says, "Umalta eis, if you circumcise him, then you can then he could eat it, right? If the Eved is not circumcised, he can't anyway eat the Korban Pesach. There's a pasuk coming up soon. Any uncircumcised person cannot eat the Korban Pesach. So if the Eved is not circumcised, of course he can't eat the Korban Pesach. So what's the pasuk saying over here? Circumcise him, then he could eat it. Who are we talking about? Huh? And no, that's not considered one. The Torah says over here explicitly that by circumcising the Eved, the master is allowed to eat the Korban Pesach.
Jewish Eved?
No.
But the Eved has nothing to do with the guy. He's not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach anyway.
He is. Okay, stop. Hold everything. But then the din is as follows. A Jewish slave is a full-fledged Jew. He just happened to steal, or he's so broke he has to sell himself into slavery. But he's a full-fledged Jew. He's obligated in all mitzvahs. If you buy a goyish slave, when slavery was allowed in the world and in Torah, there was a concept called an Eved Kanani. An Eved Kanani means a Jew was allowed to buy a non-Jewish slave. The non-Jewish slave became his property. Okay? The slave of a Kohen can eat Truma. The non-Jewish slave of a Kohen can eat Truma. When a Jewish slave who's not a Kohen cannot eat Truma. Okay? It becomes his property. It becomes his household. Now, what happens is, when you bought a goyish slave, a man, the din was he became your property, you had to give him a bris. In fact, that, if you gave him a bris, plus he even went to the mikveh. So now, after this goyish slave gets a bris and goes to the mikveh, he becomes obligated in all the mitzvahs that women are obligated in. Meaning all the negative commandments of the Torah and all positive mitzvahs not connected to time. Meaning, any mitzvahs that say shelo yazman, she'en hazman grama, that's not bound to time, like women don't have to wear tefillin. Women don't have to wear tzitzis because they're connected to time. They don't have to eat in the sukkah. All these mitzvahs are connected to time, so then women don't have to keep it. And a goyish slave who has a din in many respects, like a Jew, is also not obligated in. But just like he can't count a woman to a minyan, he can't count a slave to a minyan. That's the din. Now, if for whatever reason it is, the slave becomes free, for instance, either you freed him, or you knocked out his tooth, or his eye, or whatever it is, you knocked it out, you knocked out one of the primary organs of his body, the din is the Eved goes out free. Once he goes out free, he has a din of a full-fledged Jew. So remember, we told the story not long ago that Belezer came to Shul and there was only 9 people and he came with his Eved and he wanted a minion and he freed the Eved to be able to make a 10th person to count it for the minion.
But he didn't knock out his tooth?
No, he didn't have. No, he didn't knock out. He freed him.
What if he doesn't want to be Jewish?
So then the Rambam says that, no, yeah, it happened. The Rambam writes that what happens if you bought the slave and he says, hey, you don't give me no bris. You know, it ain't a picnic for an older gentleman to get a bris, you know. Ain't a picnic for a kid either, but they don't have any say in the matter. But
especially when Rabbi Kramer wasn't around.
Yeah. So the Gemara says, and the Rambam brings it down, they dealt with the guy for a year trying to convince him to do a bris. If after the year he refused, you have to let him go. But you understand, many of them didn't care because it's very interesting, because in Jewish law, the Gemara uses an expression, whoever buys a slave, buys a master for themselves. Because in Torah law, you have to treat a slave very nicely. So a lot of these goyish slaves would rather end up in a Jewish home, where they were treated like a mensch, rather than in many of these places where they're treated like animals.
Once he's gone, he's totally free. I mean, totally Jewish. Truth, not Jewish.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Difference.
Complete 100% Jew. Like any convert. Like any convert. So the Torah says as follows. If you, over here, if you buy an Eved and you don't circumcise him, the master can't eat the Korban Pesach. The Torah says, because the fact that you had an obligation to circumcise him, and then you didn't, you're not allowed to.
Why is he only full-fledged a Jew after?
That's what the Torah says. The whole thing is a exercise of kosov. I mean, why he's obligated in mitzvahs like a woman, and, you know. It's interesting. In Mishnah, many times you have the expression, women and slaves. And all the women know this, and they're very upset. Oh, the Torah calls us slaves, and the Torah, that's not what it's referring to. Yeah, let me see you get married and talk like that. The big talkers. Yeah, what do you know? So the Gemara is not referring to the concept women are slaves. He's just talking in the obligation of mitzvahs. So the Mishnah is putting both together because they have the same obligation as far as mitzvahs go. So it says, Nashim Vavadim are obligated in this and not obligated in that because they're just equal as far as the obligation of mitzvahs go. So the Torah says that in a case, if the Eved is not circumcised, you're not allowed to eat the meat. Okay, it's in fact interesting. Rashi brings down an argument between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, by the way. Rabbi Yeshua holds what we said, that the master also can't eat. Rabbi Eliezer holds what the Torah over here means, is that if the Eved is not circumcised, the Eved can't eat, but the master could. So Rashi himself brings down the two opinions, if the master can eat, if the slave is not circumcised. Teishav v'sachir lo yechol bei. Teishav means a ger teishav, and I'll explain in a second what that is. A sachir refers to a guy that you hired worker, not a slave that you own. So Rashi right away asks, but a guy is anyway not circumcised. How can he eat the Korban Pesach? So Rashi says, speaking about an Arab guy who is circumcised. Many of the Arabs circumcise themselves. At 13, whatever. They should do it a whole life. No, Arabs, a lot of Arabs, it depends how religious they are. They do it like Yishmol did at the age of 13. But it says that even if the guy was circumcised, but he's only a worker, so you don't own him, he also cannot eat the Korban Pesach. But what is a Teshuv? Rashi says that's a Ger Teshuv. A Ger Teshuv is a unique situation that doesn't exist today. The Rambam says there's no Ger Teshuv as man as that. But a Ger Teshuv is as follows. It's a guy who stays a guy, but he accepts to keep the 7 Noahite laws in front of a Jewish Bezdin, and he does it because God told Moshe Rabbeinu that a guy has to keep his 7 mitzvahs. He's a full-fledged guy, except he has certain rights in Eretz Yisrael because he accepted the 7 Noahite laws in front of Bezdin, and that because, you know, it's a moral thing to do, because Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to do it. So the pasuk over here is saying, even a teishav who accepted the 7 mitzvahs, so I would think, you know, he's enough, so to speak, to eat the Korban Pesach, says no. The only one who's allowed to eat a Korban Pesach, if you buy an Eved, a guy, you buy him, you own him, he has a bris, he can eat the Korban Pesach.
You can't do these things today, though, right?
No. You have to know. Sometimes it's kosher, sometimes it's not kosher. Sometimes you need to do a toughest dam bris, whatever. Okay, then the next pasuk Membov says, "B'bayis echod ye'ochel." The Korban Pesach has to be eaten in one house, meaning with one group. I'll explain in a second. Le'seitzi min abayis min abasur chutza. You're not allowed to take the meat outside of the group. Ve'etzim le'sish bruvay, and you're not allowed to break any bones in it. Meaning, the Torah said before that when they shechted the Korban Pesach, as we say every day in davening before Haidu, HaPesach Eina Nechol Ela Lemnuyov. Lemnuyov means you had to know exactly at the time you shechted the Korban Pesach, when you slaughtered it, who's part of the group. If there's 10 people in the group, you need to eat it as a group of 10 people. You can't break off into 2 5s. But Bayis Echol Yeyochol, Rashi says, means B'chabura Achas. You can't make the one group into 2 groups. If it was 10 people in the group, it had to be 10.
So if they had 2 separate tables?
Huh?
If they had 2 separate tables, they would have to put them together?
No. Like Rashi says, it doesn't mean that if you started eating outside and it started raining, that you can't go inside to eat it. That's not a problem, Rashi says. But it means if the group is 10, you have to eat the group is 10. No, I mean, you can have 2. It's still halachically 1 group. It's the same group eating it together. You're not allowed to take the Korban Pesach out of the group. So bayis over here, Rashi says, does not mean house. It means actually the group. The etzim le'sish bruvay, and the next din is, you're not allowed to break the bone of the Korban Pesach. Meaning, like Rashi says, if the bone has meat on it, you're not allowed to break the Korban Pesach. You're not allowed to break the bone. You know, a lot of times people, especially by chicken, they crack open the bones and take out the, it's called in Yiddish, the marrow. They take out the, huh?
It tastes good.
Yeah. So by Korban Pesach, he can't do that. Now Rashi says, though, it only refers, if there's a kezayis basa, I mean, if there's an ounce of meat on it, so then you can't break the bone. Now what's the reason why you can't break the bones? So they bring down a number of reasons. Number one, Jews are kings. Jews are royalty. Kings don't go biting bones. Kings don't go biting bones. There's a certain level of royal etiquette that you don't go, even though all Jews do bite bones, but not for the Korban Pesach, which symbolizes the Jewish people's royalty. And that's number one. Now, by the way, it says clearly that this is only by the Korban Pesach. It doesn't say by any other sacrifice, like you're eating a korban, it doesn't say you can't break the bone. You want to break the bone and eat the marrow, you're allowed to. Just by this. So he says, what is it? He says like this. The Egyptian worshipped the sheep. So Hashem says that if you can't eat the meat, what do you have to do? You have to throw the bones into the street. If you can't eat them, so you're going to throw them out. So the dogs end up eating them. So what does the Torah want? The Torah wants that the dogs should eat the Korban Pesach to degrade the Egyptians' worshipping of the lamb. So when the dogs are eating the lamb, it's a big degrading for the Egyptians who worship the lamb. And obviously Hashem wants to give a little bit of reward to the dogs for not barking, you know, and like we learned. So therefore, this is the halacha of not breaking the bones. Okay, then, what?
Once it becomes a korban, does it become heftish? Does it become like holy?
Yes, so therefore, what you ask by Pesach or by the other ones? Yeah, but the leftovers you can throw out. What do you do with leftover korban? You throw it out.
It's just like bread, you're not supposed to discard it, you know, in a bad manner.
Yeah, but a korban you could throw out. You have to throw out respectfully, but you can't. The dogs ended up eating it. Or the dogs in the house. There's no meat. I'm talking about the meat. It's a korban. But a korban? In all Jewish houses, they used to have a cat and a rooster. It's interesting. There was a Hasidic artist. Many of you might remember the Mendel Futterfass. Had a brother by the name of Hendel Lieberman. They had different last names because of the Russian papers, you know, getting out of the country. And this Hendel Lieberman was a Hasidic Jew and he was an artist. His pictures are very beautiful. And he used to, when he painted a picture, he used to show it to the Rebbe. And one time, in the early years, he showed his picture to the Rebbe about like a chosid in the house and whatever, you know, different pictures. So the Rebbe said to him, you're mixing the cat and the rooster. Because every Hasidic house, or every house in the olden times, had a rooster and a cat. The cat was to keep the mice away. In the olden times, that was the best repellent of mice were cats. Huh? Yeah, because the mice smelled the cat. They didn't. You know, a lot of bakeries in New York, and here not, the bakeries in New York have cats in the back of the where they bake. Push it simply to keep the mice out. Yeah. They don't come into the front when the store's open. They keep them in the back. And the rooster was to wake up the Jew in the morning. So the Rebbe said to him, well, you're missing the cat and the rooster. But they didn't necessarily have dogs in the houses. They used to throw them out and give them to the street. Okay, then it says as follows. Every single Jew has to do it. Now, what's this pasuk saying? So Rashi is explaining that the fact that the Torah says over here, celebrate service, you know, per household. So it says, Rashi says that even if it's not one by Pesach and Mitzrayim, they had to do it by families. Ish celebrate service. The pasuk says that to be per family. Here the pasuk is saying, Kol Adasi Sro Yatzo Esei, you didn't need to have one family only per Korban Pesach. You're able to have a number of families together for the Korban Pesach. Just in Egypt, they needed one Korban for a family. And then it says like this, V'chi yogur itcho ger, and if a ger will live with you, V'ase Pesach l'Hashem, and he wants to make this Pesach for Hashem, he says, Imolo kilzochor, he has to do a bris, V'ase yikir av l'aseis, then he can come close to do it, V'haya kezach ha'ara, to be like any other citizen in the land, V'chal ara le'echol bei, a person who's not circumcised cannot eat it. Now, what is this pasuk adding? If we already said, basically, a non-circumcised person can't eat it, this pasuk is adding another interesting dimension. And that is, even if halacha said you can't circumcise yourself, you still can't eat the Korban Pesach. There's a din in the Gemara that a person who had two brothers died because of circumcision, he was not allowed to have a bris. Because we're afraid he might also die. It's in the family. So the Torah says, you're not allowed to do a bris. So now the question is, the Torah says I can't do a bris, so, but why can't I eat the Korban Pesach? The Torah says, tough luck. Kol ara le'echol bei. Even if the reason why you're not circumcised is because the Torah says you're not allowed to circumcise yourself, you still cannot eat the Korban Pesach. And you can't say, what do you want from me? It's not my fault. The Torah says no. Now, the Medrash brings down a whole story over here that when the Jews heard this, it was already, Hashem said it to them on the 14th of Nisan. So the Jews heard, "Oy vey, no bris, no Korban Pesach." That night, Moshe Rabbeinu, this Korban Pesach, once we learned this, and his, Hashem took the winds and it blew the smell of his barbecued Korban Pesach all over the land, and they all came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, "Moshe Rabbeinu, give us the Korban Pesach." So he says, "Sorry, boys, no bris, no Korban Pesach," because the only tribe, the Gemara says, that circumcised themselves in Egypt was Levi. The other Jews didn't do a bris in Egypt. So they come to Moshe Rabbeinu the night of Pesach, and they hear on the 14th Hashem said, no circumcision, no Korban Pesach. And they came and they said, Baitchik, Moshe Rabbeinu, give us Korban Pesach. It's a good, delicious recipe. Moshe Rabbeinu said, boys, tough luck. Hashem said, no bris, no Korban Pesach. So the Medrash says the Jews went and circumcised themselves that night. And Moshe did the circumcision, and Aaron did the priya, the tearing of the skin. It was a whole process that all the Jews, and one Jew was giving it to the next Jew. Every Jew did a bris milah that night.
And the next day they left Egypt.
Yeah, so you're asking two very good questions. So number one, the question is, like we find Moshe Rabbeinu didn't circumcise his baby because he said, I'm going on a trip, it's dangerous to circumcise himself, remember, and then go on a trip. So the question is, how could the Jews do a bris and the next day leave? So it said that night Hashem healed them all. After the bris, that an instant, it was outpatient. No painkillers, everything was healed. But the other question is an interesting question. It says, you're not allowed to do a bris at night. So how could the Jews do a bris in the night of Pesach if a bris has to be be'etzem ayom hazeh, bayom hashmini, it has to be done by day? And the answer is, that night the Jews left Egypt, even Chassidus explains it, but even Miam Leir says, he says, even though this man is only by day, because the night of Pesach was shining the sun. The Laila Kayyim Yoyed, it was a night of complete light. So therefore it didn't have a din of night, it had a din of day. And if it had a din of day, they were able to circumcise themselves. It's another miracle. It depends what time, man. Yeah, maybe.
Huh?
The what? One of the reasons because that, well, the simple reason because that's the night the Jews went out. Okay, so basically he says if the ged becomes a ged, he's allowed to eat the carbon pesach. Then the pasuk says, the Torah says, a ged, and this pasuk, by the way, is the pasuk that teaches us that a Jewish convert, according to Halacha, is equal to a Jew in all aspects. The Torah says here, in pasuk Memtes, Torah achas hiya le'ezrach, there should be one Torah for the citizens, v'laged agor b'seichachem, and to the converts. That means a convert is a Jew, which is a full-fledged Jew. If you remember, we discussed, just very briefly, again, remember we mentioned the Chidah's, the Rebbe always called it the Chidah that says, it doesn't say in the Gemara, Goy who converts. It says a convert who converts. Ger shenizgayer. It should say Goy shenizgayer. Just like it says, a prisoner was freed, a sick person became healthy, it should say a Goy who converts. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah a Goy converts. It says Gershin is Gayer, a convert who converts. So the Chidah explains, why does it say Gershin is Gayer? So the Chidah explains, because a convert, a halachic convert, not talking about the Mickey Mouse ones, a halachic convert was always a Jew. And like the Or HaChaim HaKadosh explains, in Parshas Ki Tzeitzei, the famous Or HaChaim HaKadosh explains, that when Adam HaRishon sinned in the Eitz Hadas, when he sinned, a lot of Jewish neshamas got lost amongst the goyim. Got lost amongst the goyim. And when a person comes to convert and he's serious and he does it according to halacha, it's really a Jewish neshama. It happened to get lost amongst the goyim. That's why it says in Pirkei the Rabbi Lazar that by Matan Torah, all the future converts of all generations were there when God gave the Torah to the Jews. Why? Because really they're Jewish. But they got lost amongst the Goyim. So therefore the truth is, a convert, if it's proper convert, the Torah says over here, it's the same Torah for him than it is for the Ged. He's a full-fledged Jew. Neshama is there. Therefore it doesn't say Goy Shin is Guy because a Goy doesn't convert. A convert converts. Yeah. No, I mean, in a practical sense. Probably they were mostly Erev Rav, yeah. But it could be, I mean, I tell you, the truth is, Halacha asks the question, why does a Ger have to celebrate Pesach? His forefathers weren't in Egypt. Right? I mean, hey, if you have an African convert, right? He wasn't in Egypt. So what is he celebrating Pesach for? Right? What? Yeah, maybe, but it's a doubt, right? The answer is, his neshama was there, and you know what I mean, but there's still a concept of this. Okay, so it says, Vayatzu kol b'nei Yisrael, all the Jews did, kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe v'Aaron, when Hashem commanded Moshe and Aaron, kein osu, that's what they did. Okay, sit back 1 second. Okay, so just to finish up this last pasuk, Vayhi be'etem ayem azeh was in the middle of this day, and here the Mefarshim asks you a question. If it says they went out at night, here it says they went out in the middle of the day. Hayti Hashem et b'nei Yisrael me'etz Mitzrayim. Hashem took the Jews out of Mitzrayim, al tzaveisim on their hosts. So the question is, if the Jews went out of Mitzrayim at night, why does it say they went out during the day? So the Mefarshim answer that they started going out at night because, you know, it took them to do it. But Lepel, they went out during the day.
How come they didn't have time to bake the bread, they put in their bag, they run out?
So now they have when they're bread, running out.
But they had 12 hours to
run. No, they're packing.
Oh.
You said that
they're collecting all the money and everything, you know, they're emptying out Egypt.
The sun shining in this.
Yeah.
My
Yeah, but you're right. But Be'etamim, that means the middle of the day. Uh-huh. The middle of the day. You're right. That would also answer the question a little bit, because if the night shined like the day, so it doesn't matter. They went out in the middle of the day. But basically, the Jews went out on Thursday. Yeah.
If they, you said that the night became day, and it says Hashem in the middle of the night went and it smote the Egyptians. Mm-hmm. So it was actually light when Hashem smote the Egyptians.
Either by the Jews was light, because it says in the plague of darkness, the Jews had it light.
Right.
So whether it was light for the Egyptians also that night, I don't know. But for the Jews, it was light.
Like in the miracle.
The plague of darkness. Again, I don't know if it was light also for the garden, that I don't know. That I didn't see anywhere. But for the Jews, for sure, it was light.
Yeah.